The book, Hairstyles of the Damned, is a series of sketches that form a coming-of-age story about punk teenagers on the south side of Chicago in the early 1990s, or maybe punkers who don't quite come of age. In August, the small publisher Punk Planet printed 4,000 books and hoped they'd sell. Today, with virtually no major reviews or marketing, the book has sold more than 20,000 copies and gone into its third printing. Joe Mino is the author. His story about Brian, Gretchen, the music they love, and the loves that scare them seem to be finding an audience with a generation who grew up on punk rock and Pop-Tarts. Joe Mino also teaches creative writing at Columbia College in Chicago and joins us from our studios in Chicago. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Scott.
Let's talk about the music. We'll make people wait to talk about the sex.
Okay.
All these groups that were so important, and when I say important, I mean a little bit more important to your characters than, let's say, Frank Sinatra ever was to my mother or the Beatles were to me.
Well, I think what was so important to me, and in this book, it's based very strongly on my personal experience growing up. I was a teenager in the early 90s, and I grew up on the south side of Chicago. And growing up in that neighborhood, I was listening to music that was on the radio, pop music, everything from Guns N' Roses and the bands that MTV were really fostering at the time. And there were bands that didn't have really any political or social content to anything that they were singing about. Slowly, just by being given a mixtape, being turned on to bands that I'd never heard before, like Black Flag or Minor Threat, bands that were actually singing about something, singing about Reagan economics, singing about racism, singing about social problems. That just had a huge effect on the way that I looked at the world and also what I thought music could actually do for people.
I guess it's Brian says Something by the Misfits was an album that saved his life.
It's true. It's very true. In a lot of ways, they're kind of kitschy. They're very influenced by horror movies, and they wear makeup, and there's a lot of skulls and bats and things like that on their records. And for a 15-year-old boy, there's something about that sense of horror and maybe the way you approach the world that seems really, really attractive. And he decides this is his band.
Mommy! Shinako Wadden! Kill tonight!
And there's a part where he's walking in the mall and he sees these kids and they're making fun of him. In any other chapter in the book previously, he might have just walked away. But for some reason, he steps up to these kids and he just stands there and points his finger at them. He just kind of points at them and then walks away. And it's a pretty direct relation to the kind of empowerment that he's feeling listening to these different bands.
Territory we're talking about, the south side of Chicago, has for a century or more been savagely segregated. I mean, a lot of human beings have been hurt, crime, bloodshed, race riots. The March of Nazis through Marquette Park, I think, is still a famous historical incident and certainly the history of the city and even this country. Gretchen, one of your characters falls for, I think his name is Tony Deegan.
You got it.
Who's a white supremacist.
Right.
And she knows that racism is wrong. But she also doesn't want to care about anyone too much. And Tony's racism lets her learn about sex and then dismiss him.
The kids that make up the book and that are taking part in these racist acts, they're not part of some larger white power organization. They're just kids who grew up in this neighborhood that's very, very intolerant. And in the book, racial tension finally comes to a head where the senior class of this Catholic school on the south side decides to have a separate prom. And this is actually based on an event that occurred in May of 1991 where the senior class of Brother Rice High School the school I attended, the students couldn't agree on the music to be played at prom. And so the black kids kind of took it upon themselves to say, we're going to have our own prom. And in the book, the way that it's handled, Brian is kind of undecided. And there's a part in the story where he's riding in the station wagon with his parents. And he's now really just gotten into punk music, and he's discovered this band, The Misfits, that he really loves. And he has his headphones on, and he's listened to The Misfits, and all of a sudden he has this weird inclination where he takes this cassette tape out of his tape player, and he puts it into the tape player of the station wagon, and he wants his parents to hear this music that he's fallen in love with. They listen to it for just a couple minutes, and then the dad ejects it and hands it back to him. And it's through that scene that Brian begins to understand why it's so important to these young black kids that what they love is just equally valued or appreciated.
We promised we'd talk about sex, too.
Well, we don't want to disappoint anybody.
Yeah, you've got a wonderfully done romantic scene. If I could get you to turn to page 98, just put it this way, it's a makeout scene.
It is definitely a makeout scene. Really at the heart of what this book is about, beyond the music or the sense of racial tension or even the sense of desperation that these kids feel in their own lives, it's a love story. It starts off, the first sentence is about Brian suddenly having this realization that he's in love with his friend Gretchen and the problems that occur because of that.
If you could read the out of nowhere paragraph.
Sure. Out of nowhere, we were making out, and I felt her lips against my mouth and her tongue against my teeth, and we were leaning forward uncomfortably. And as she grabbed me by my T-shirt, vroom, went the pool filter and the singing heat and the cymbals from Last Caress still ringing and kids downstairs shouting and a small dog somewhere barking and the wetness, the smooching of lips against lips and the baby soft smell of her cheeks, and the sweet peach snaps in her kiss, and strange chlorine of her hair, and the pool, and the summery taste of her mouth, and spit. Okay, so this is it. This is what it feels like to be really liked by somebody. And I really like this girl, and I hope she really likes me, and I hope I'm doing it okay.
I just found that so unexpectedly sweet. I mean, you're about to get to what they're about to get to, and then thank God you dragged love into it, or at least a teenager's anxiety about, oh my God, does she like me?
And that's what was a really important part of me for me to write the book was, mm-hmm. In a lot of ways you see these characters as like outcasts or strangers, and it was important for me to draw characters that were human beings, first of all.
Your last novel, How the Hula Girl Sings, was published by a publisher a lot of people would recognize.
HarperCollins.
How do you wind up with Punk Planet? Your decision?
I sent it to my agent and MTV Books. MTV, the music channel, also has a publishing company. They were really, really interested in it. But they wanted to change a lot of the specifics of the book. They wanted it updated to the year 2004. And they also wanted to change all the bands to current MTV bands. And what was really problematic about that is that there were no bands at that time and to this day that are any way talking about any of the social issues the bands that really have such a profound effect on Brian in the book are.
So let me get this straight. MTV said, we love the book, just totally change essentially what you're saying here and we'll publish it.
Exactly. And and I don't think that's that unheard of, Scott. In a lot of ways... What's happened in corporate publishing in just the last 5 years or 10 years is that these publishers see a market, and regardless of what the content of the book is, they're interested in turning a profit. There's just become this really safety, the idea of publishing books that are very safe and not very challenging. And when you go to a bookstore, you can just kind of look at the new fiction selection. Just see how similar all these different titles are, how even the covers all look kind of the same. I feel like we're in battle with them, and not with small stakes, but for kind of, you know, with the direction of arts and the way we communicate with each other in this country. If we only make art to make money, I think dealing with big social issues like racism or love or any of the things that we talked about today are going to get less and less important, and we'll just kind of have more and more pop music that doesn't ask us to ask any questions.
Mr. Mino, nice talking to you.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Scott.